All right, this is David Wolford, and it is the 11th of August, 2002. I'm in Madisonville at Miss Dixie Logan's house, and I'm here with Mr. James Van Leer and Mrs. Elizabeth Van Leer and Miss Dixie Logan. We're going to talk a little bit about Madisonville and the integration of schools here in the late 50s. Perhaps if each of you would introduce yourself, tell where you were born, and you know, where you grew up, and where you were educated. And we probably should just start with Ms. Van Leer, if that's okay.
I was born in Madisonville, Kentucky, 1920. And I don't know the other question.
Just, where did you grow up here in Madisonville?
Oh, yes.
And where did you attend school?
I attended school at Rosenwald High and Madisonville High, those two places.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And James, where and when were you born?
I was born in October 27, 1947. Mrs. Elizabeth Van Leer is my mother, and it was in Madisonville, Kentucky. And I started in Branch Street School, and then was my mother took me from Branch Street School and put me into Wattle Avenue School. So she took me from the white school, took me from the black school, and entered me into the white school.
And what year was that?
I don't know, 53?
10 years old.
No, that's two.
50, was it not in fall 57?
Oh, you mean when
I started school?
When did you actually enter
Wattle
Avenue?
1956.
Okay.
Yes.
So your mama's got all that stuff.
Okay. And Miss Logan, would you please tell us about yourself? Where did you grow up, and what did you do here in Madisonville?
I started teaching in 1937 at Charleston, one of the county schools. And there were 8 rooms there, and there were, we had 2 rooms. It was a 2-year high school there, and we had much fun there. Well, everybody had such a good time. All the teachers were so congenial, and I thought all students were brilliant. I had no dreaming idea that you would come to the place that there would be students that wouldn't be as bright as those. Now, I don't know whether it was because I was so young. I started out when I was 19 with a 2-year certificate. Then I stayed there 4 years, and I would go back in the spring term. It was only a 7-month school. And I would go in the spring term to Bowling Green, and maybe say in the summer. I had the offer to come to Madisonville in 1941. And I came to Wattle with 96 hours, and so then I did not go back to Bowling Green for maybe 10 years, and then I decided I wanted my degree, and I went back, and I went on Saturdays and in the summers and had my BS degree in 49, I think. Then I stayed out another 5 years or so and went back and did get my master's. And the education is something you can't take away from you. I have enjoyed, let's see, I was only teaching 9 years when they made me a teaching principal. And Mr. Gatton was a superintendent of schools, city schools, at that time. And he called me at 7:30 the morning that school opened and said I would be principal as well as the teaching. We, I think, received $60 a month for being a principal besides teaching all day long. It was a challenge, and it was fun, and I enjoyed it. The children either liked me or they hated me. There was no in between. We had lots of fun. If I made a child unhappy, sometime during the day I tried to make that child happy before he went home. It was really, we had expected, when the ultimatum came down from Washington, that we would have no longer have segregated schools. We all knew, and we were all expecting students all over the time, see, for several years. Now, James did not come in the first year that we could have had them. I think it was the second or third year, wasn't it?
Well,
the integration taking
place 1954. Uh-huh. And of course, we had to have the battle here,
uh-huh,
meeting with faculties and all.
Yes.
Doing that after that. But it occurred definitely in 1956.
Is that when he came to?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So, ma'am. But the ultimatum came down in 1956?
Yes, that's when we had gone through the Owensboro court and everything. Mm-hmm. And that's when it was really,
just didn't think he came in the first year when the ultimatum came down from Washington.
When you're speaking of the ultimatum, are you talking about the Supreme Court decision?
When they made the decision.
Yep, that was
54.
Right, so James did not come into my school for mm-hmm. 2 years.
Right.
So it was not a surprise when he came in. We had registered our children that day, and all the children were gone when the family came in to register him. So, of course, the word spread like wildfire, and it was headlines in the paper, Madisonville paper, the next day, saying that Waddle was integrated. And the next morning, Ms. Van Leer brought James, and all the other mothers were there. I mean, my room was lined up, all the parents, all the way around the room.
Were the mothers there for?
Well, they were just wanting to see. They just didn't believe it, and I don't know what they thought, but they wanted to be there. And I guess that maybe I won a battle that very day. We didn't have uniform seats at all. We had, maybe we'd have a junior high chair, or maybe we would have a little one that would just fit him. But he ended up sitting in one of these junior high chairs, which was one of those old things that had the arm to it, you know, on the side. He said, he didn't say anything, but one mother came in and she had a great big fat child in that room. And I can remember that one as well as anything. And she came up to me and she said, "Miss Logan, I'd like to put my child in the chair that he's sitting in." And I said, "That's perfectly all right. You may do so." And she started to make James get up. And she was going to pick the chair up. And I said, "No, ma'am, you will not pick the chair up. If you want your son to sit in that chair, it's perfectly all right for him to sit there, and James can sit in the small chair." Well, I won my battle. That was my battle. She backed off, and we never did have any other incident that day that I can remember of.
This was the first day James came.
This was
came.
The first day he was in school when classes came. Now, you see, we were already dismissed the day he enrolled. See, he was only there. You remember that?
Yes.
Everybody was gone.
You enrolled him in the afternoon or one of the first school days?
Uh-huh. The first day of school, he was enrolled. I think we just had the enrollment that day, and that's all.
Okay.
And so we were, I think it must have been about 1 o'clock because the teachers were all there. And we were all standing out in the hall when they came out. So we really had our conference there and then went into my room. There were so many things at that time. They had the all-white library. They had the all-white park. there were so many things that they had that wasn't fair to anybody. But I can remember at the end, we got, James and I got along fine. I mean, we didn't have anything at all. Now, I wasn't going to let anybody do anything to it. I guess I spoiled him rotten. I don't know. But maybe he wasn't. But I remember that I really wasn't going to let anybody pick on him. The last day of school, we had the parents wanted to, we took the children on a picnic or something. Something for fun. And we didn't have buses in the city then. We had them running in the county. So these mothers and I had decided that we would have a picnic for the children at the park. And we would get one of the school buses to take the children to the park for the picnic. Okay. We thought that was fun. That night we had everything settled, and about 9 o'clock I said to my mother, "Oh, Mom, I don't know whether we can even go to the park or not. I just then thought that it's an all-white park." And Pee-wee, the mayor, lived right down on the next corner from me. And I called him and I said, "Pee-wee, I want to ask you something. I want permission to take my class to the park for a picnic." And I said, "You know, I have James Van Leer in my class. He's the only black student that is in the county at this time." So he said, "Dixie, I would love to give you this. You will know about this." Said, "I would love to give you permission. But if I gave you permission, probably nothing would happen. But," said, this town is sitting on a cake of dynamite. Said, "It could blow or it could go smoothly. But," said, "I can't give you permission." Well, I said, "Thank you." He said, "I don't think you better try." I hung up the phone and I went like this to my mother. I said, "Mother, what luck." So I had a good sales talk the next morning. I went into that room and I said, "Children, you all have been such a wonderful class all year long. We have had so much fun, and we are going to go on a bus ride today. But," I said, "I want you to come to my house for the picnic." Now, we had a great big backyard, great big field out there in the back. Well, it wasn't. It was a lot. Make them up. And I said, "We can play there." And I said, "Then you will be at my house. I just want you to be at my house instead of the park. It'd be so much fun for me to have you there." And I said, "Besides that, you will get a longer bus ride. We're going to go all the way to Hampton and come around by the Brown Road and come right up to my house." Do you know, it worked like a charm, and they had the best time, and nobody ever knew anything about it.
Wow. Let me return to James here. You attended the Branch Street Elementary. This was an all-black school in your first couple of years of schooling.
First three years.
Tell me a little bit about Branch Street Elementary. Whatever you know you can recall about it, your teachers, the building itself. What was the school day like there?
I remember this one teacher. Her name was Orwell Clemens. And she had had her teeth pulled. Wasn't no teeth in here. And it looked kind of vampire-ish like. Yeah, that's one of the things I remember. And I remember there were still some smart persons, smarter than I was, and there were some persons that weren't interested. And I remember this one teacher that stood out also. Her name was Miss Dickerson, and she was quite a teacher. After a while, they they added on to the Branch Street School. They started, you know, building more onto it.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. Well, my classroom.
What kind of condition was the school in? You say it still stands today?
Yes.
What kind of condition was the school in back then?
I guess it was okay condition. I remember one time when they were, you know, I don't remember a lot of things, but I remember one time when it was snowing and icy, and they were having recess, and at the base of Branch Street School, there was a deep hill,
mm-hmm.
and of course I went out and was going, you know, just playing and frolicking and slipped on that icy part and went all the way down the hill, you know, and that type of thing.
Did the building was it a brick building?
Yes.
Running water and everything.
It had all of that.
Probably modern for its time.
Yeah, it was modern for its time. Yeah, running water, hot and cold, running water. You know, bathrooms. They were kept clean. You know, I mean, everything was kept pretty clean.
I think first story I ever told. I was a little girl when that building was there, and it was about Flopsy and Mopsy, Cottontail and Peter. And they had me on the, you know, how they had the children in the concerts, I believe they used to call it. And that's the building that he's talking about now. So, and that was the building that used to be Ross Delmont High. But they began to bring it back to a graded school, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But now you see when they integrated the two schools, see when he came, we still had the black and white schools, but they integrated the school. And I was the principal of both Waddle and Branch Street. And I was going around the corner, see, every time something came up that I needed to be in one school, I'd always be going around the corner to the other school.
Were you the only white faculty on the Branch Street, were you the only white member of the Branch Street faculty at the time?
Oh, no. By the time they had integrated, they had moved the black teachers in different schools, and I had what'd you say her name was?
Orla Clemens.
Well, she was a nice looking person at that time. She had all her teeth, and she really was nice looking, and a good teacher. I had her as one of them over there, and I had several. There was one from Nebo, and there was the building itself was in wonderful condition. In fact, that school had the only televisions set in the whole county. That school, now I'm not saying that you all had put the television, I'm saying that the patrons probably bought that. Rather than, I don't know how you got the TV, but it was in the library, and it was the only TV that we had
in
the whole county. I don't
remember
seeing it. It was a little, it was a small one. It was about a 13-inch, but when Martin Luther King died, well, we had, the children could either go home or they could stay at our school and watch it over TV.
Well, I tell you you're saying something to me. I had already made up my mind what I was going to do about James.
Mm-hmm.
They had something, this is Lola, you might know about, and I really don't know how it was phrased or set up, that if a teacher felt that the student didn't have enough in that class, even if he did pass, and you might know too, they could keep him in that class somewhat longer. I see that he comes, would come up to the average that they feel that he was weak in or something of that kind. So I'd made up a mind, and when I got to the school that day, there was, you know, had all cards and things was made out. I'm talking about down on Brand Street.
Yeah.
Then I, Miss Clemens came out in the hall, and James, he had made the grade, but just barely made it to get to the other class, you know. And seeing that they would let the teacher really have, they would grant their opinion of it, whether he should go or be strong enough at that particular time if he just barely gotten by. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
To go to the other class. So Miss Clemens came out of that, and Mrs. Pritchett. If you remember Mrs. Pritchett?
Can't remember.
What was her first name?
Pritchett. The name sounds familiar, but I can't
yeah.
put a face or anything.
But anyway, Miss Orbell Clemens came out in the hall when I came there to talk to him about James, that I was thinking of carrying him and integrating him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the teacher came out and said that it really wasn't wise to take him to the next class, although he was in position that he could go on, but she wanted to say that he wouldn't be advised.
He would be stronger.
That's what I'm trying to say. So
stronger
there was the two
safe.
Teachers out there in the hall, and so, well, the other one came out, and she said to us, and now Miss Van Leer said, now, if you just really want him to go on into the next grade, said, I would accept. That's what she said. So as I stood there with the two teachers, I said, I've already made my mind up. I want to go to the other school.
Well, let me, that leads right to my next question. In the Madisonville Messenger, I forget the date of this, but one of the headlines, probably the day after you registered, James, it said only one Negro registered. And this is after the court case. This is probably, you know, people were anticipating how many blacks would come over now that there is permission from the school board, but only one Negro registered, and my question to you is why was it James? Why was James the first black to go to school with white students in this county?
The others got it for you. There was a whole list of them. We met at the Zion Church, and as the NACP, you know, it was decided that we get the names of the ones they would want to enter. So at this church, they come up, and this one put his name down, the other put his name down. But the people, they didn't seem to understand. They thought going to the Messenger, so I imagine it was about 20-some, I'm not exact, I don't know the number,
mm-hmm.
that put their names down on there.
And they were supposed to enroll that day, weren't
yes,
they?
Yes, yes, yes. So what happened, they got afraid. They just really got afraid. People were afraid that they'd lose their jobs, and you know, whoever would teach them, would treat them like a sore thumb and different things like that. So they all just went one by one and pulled their names off. Take my name off the list. I don't want my name off.
Yeah, I've got it here. It was 11 families and 21 students that actually were plaintiffs in the suit that
yes.
went.
Yes.
But let me ask you, was that fear?
They pulled the names off. Yes, they were afraid.
Was that
I'm
fear
sure
legitimate? That was that fear, did they need to be afraid? I mean, was that an unnecessary fear?
I don't feel it was unnecessary. I feel that they had in mind, they didn't know how dealt with the whites. You know, I feel this was a war, but a different kind of war.
There never was a lawsuit at any time, was it?
Certainly.
Yes. In Owensboro.
I don't remember.
When we came in that school, all of that was fought and won.
Oh, okay.
Well, immediately integration.
All right. I guess I forgot.
The school. Felt that, like we had the meeting with the board and everything. They felt that. that it was really going to come about anyhow. This is the way I felt. But in coming about, then they wanted to hold it down to one grade at a time. Integrate the first grade and the second grade. So I have to tell it like it is, and I think it's necessary to be told like it is.
Please.
Yes, and in Owensboro, when they fought it down, no, it cannot be that way. It has to be immediately in the whole thing. So.
The Hopkins County Board of Education created an integration plan where one grade would be integrated by choice per year over 12 years. And the judge in Owensboro, the Owensboro Court, actually ruled that plan unconstitutional. But what would you, why did the board come up with such a plan, do you think?
Probably to slow the procedure down and give the white power structure a chance to battle against it and find loopholes against it and find loopholes around it, I would suppose.
They just didn't really want integration. That's what I figured. They just didn't want that.
How did you respond, Ms. Van Leer? How did you respond to that plan when you first heard about it?
Well, I was sitting in the auditorium because they had a long pink, I guess they have carbon carpets, pink yarn, and they had these long roofs that they were coming out with. And when they read the part about not being integrated, you know, completed or anything, you know. And I was sitting, Attorney James Cronin was sitting here on the side. And I had another, Miss Taylor, I don't know whether you know that she was an instructor too, very good one. And she just speaks so well. She sounded like a pro speaking, in speaking.
Sure.
She was sitting on one side of me, Attorney Cronin on the other, and I was in the middle. And when they read this long paper saying, one at a time and one year at a time or something. So when they said that, I done this away to jump up and challenge it. And Attorney Crummer threw his arms across me. And not yet, he said, no, don't say anything. We are looking into it. We're scheduling everything here to carry to court. So he kept me from standing. So that's how I reacted. I want to jump. Because I know from year to year, look how many thousands of our children would be helped out and how long. So that was the way it was.
Let's talk a little bit about the NAACP here in Madisonville. How did that really come to be? I know that you were president, local president. Were you the first president of the NAACP here?
No, I think my mother, I believe, was the first.
Okay, so the organization locally had already been established by the time schools were declared by the time segregation was declared unconstitutional. There was already an NAACP chapter here by the 50s. Well, tell me about the activity in the mid-50s or late-50s, you know, up until the point where the lawsuit actually happened and was decided. You know, what kind of communication did you have with Louisville, with Mr. Crumlin? You know, what kind of membership did you have here in Madisonville in the NAACP?
Well, Mr. Crummer was one of the strongest presidents I believe I had ever seen, because he knew the law, he was an attorney, and a good one. So this had already been worked on nationally by the NAACP, you know. From different states, you know, when they started this, they was ready. In my understanding, as the lawyers fought, they didn't even go to bed. They slept out there on the porches of the White House. They didn't even go in to lay down. And so they stayed there until it was given to them that this chain would be broken. You know, and they had all the law for it. So that then they sent to us the plan as the steps that we
we need to go by to get this accomplished. So by me being the president, you know, they give us the understanding as what might occur, and anything could have, you know.
What were some examples they, I'm sorry.
Excuse me, how many did you have in CAA?
NAACP.
I get my letters mixed up now, so much faster.
Well, as we had meetings, of course, I don't remember the number, you know, sometime was 24, 25, you know, would come to the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes that, like we needed, they had a Goodrich restaurant, and sometimes would be so many that someone would stand out in the under the trees while we were having the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't I don't remember how many members we had, you know, but I imagine about 30 or something like that, you know.
This is for any of you, really. How did the Board of Education respond to this law? Yeah, how did the Board of Education respond to the lawsuit that was filed against them?
Well, it wasn't nothing they could do, you know. We went to this, I went to the courts, and it wasn't many there. And
wasn't many board members there?
I don't remember many of they being there. Mm-hmm. So that the judge contacted them to let them know,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, there was one attorney from New York, but I can't think of. I had to read him on my books to see, because I meant to. I just hadn't had time.
Mm-hmm.
So Crumlin, he was there, and it wasn't very many people there. Some standing around.
This was in Owensboro. You're talking
in
about.
In Owensboro.
Was the attorney from New York? Was it Jack Greenberg?
Well, you said Jack Greenberg, but I don't think that was his name. I'll have to check.
Okay.
And I'll let you know that here.
Yes.
So,
throw those pillows on the floor.
Throw them on the floor. Throw them on the floor. That's where they're supposed to be anyway. Nobody wants those silly pillows.
Yes, ma'am.
They stay on the
floor. All over. Why?
There's one over there behind you. Get it off.
I was thinking his name was Gordon.
Gosh, they're hot.
That accompanied Mr.
Yeah.
Crumlin?
Yes, but there wasn't a garden here. It was a garden over that was over the federal courts or whatever. It was a different garden, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it should be down there in Owensboro. It should be. They will let you know.
Miss Logan, what do you recall when the integration became obvious that it was going to happen, or that there was a push for the integration? Do you recall what the public opinion was about this in the white community?
You know, I don't remember discussing it a whole lot. I really don't. In the principal's meetings, I don't remember discussing it. I remember after. We had integrated, and even after Baby James had already left our school, we had more blacks, but they hadn't come to Pride at that time. The Pride school was where they had the trouble here in my school.
Yes, why was there, I've read that the following year, after James integrated Waddle Avenue, which is part of the Hopkins County Board, the next year at Pride Elementary, there was a boy named James Mays, I believe, and maybe at least one or two other black kids that came there. Why was there a problem the following year at Pride when there wasn't such the problem, I think, once he entered the school building the year before?
I think it was a different class of people that were there. I think that we had the elite blacks and the sensible whites around in our area. There was I don't want to say, but it was a lower class of whites, and they did not accept the blacks like our people did. Now, of course, I know that he went through an awful lot, but so did I with holding my head up. Now, for instance, when we would go to principal's meetings, these principals, we'd all be in the same car. You know, there'd be about five or six of us in a car going to Louisville or wherever. And they'd say, I'd say, you know what? When we get back home, I'm going to go to Mr. Crow, and I'm going to give him a wonderful idea about what we can do. I said, I think each one of the principals should go and visit another school for a week and be in charge of that school for a whole week.
Ooh.
I said, it would be fun to see the problems that different schools have. Mm-hmm. Boy, I'm telling you, they said, no way.
I know it did.
No way am I going to swap schools with you. I wouldn't have any idea how to handle the situation.
And this was after it was integrated,
and
you're talking about?
After it was integrated, yes, because we were going to some kind of a meeting out of town, and I thought it would be so much fun, you know, to see what their reaction was. Of course, I didn't have any idea. I didn't know whether I could handle theirs or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun, and they just had a fit. Now, I think that it was hard all along, and I think a lot of it is still going on in this thing. I think there's just a lot of racial stuff going on right here. Now, I don't know about it, but I mean, my old dyed in the wool friends, some of them are just as rabid as they can be.
One thing of pride you're talking about, it was pretty well known in the town that many of the white people who were on the front steps of the school at Pride Avenue causing the trouble and disturbance did not have children in the school.
Were some of them not
right?
Even from Madisonville? Would you say some were not even from the area as
My
well?
My guess would be they came from a lot of places. They were segregationists and probably Ku Klux Klanners.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't, and many of them didn't have any children in that school.
Mm-hmm.
But they were on the steps making their disturbance.
Mm-hmm.
But they, it wasn't necessarily at all the parents of those children.
Do you all remember, or would you remember, the time that they sent busloads in here from Chicago, but there were black people that were
mm-hmm.
on this? Now then, I was at Branch Street. Thank heavens I was in that building at the time. And you know where the back door over there where the wing was added on? They would come in that back door and go out around through the hall and back out the one on the street that goes out there on the street. And they would yell, Black Power.
Hmm.
I mean, they yelled it. And then, in about 20 minutes, there'd be another group that'd come through again. Well, I went to the teachers and I said, close your doors. Or I closed the doors after the first one. And so, it kept on and it kept on. And finally, about the fifth time, I called office. And I told Mr. Crow what was going on. And I said, I think you and somebody at the head of that place over there ought to come over here and be in my building with us. I said, we only have the janitor. And I said, of course, he's going to protect us in every way he can, but I don't know why they're doing this. I never understood why they were doing this. And
I'm just now hearing about that.
Well, there were three or four busloads.
Buses.
So anyway, what was so funny, though?
Were they black people?
There were black people, and they came in yelling Black Power and going out. They came in the door over there on one side of the cafeteria, walked through the halls, and walked out the back. Well, and Mr. Crow said, well, somebody will come over there. Well, he sent Mr. Pat McGill. And Pat came in. Well, by that time, it was about 11 o'clock when he got there, and he said, well, I don't see any disturbance around here. said, let's eat lunch. So we ate lunch, no disturbance. Mm-hmm. We sat around for a little while there with him, you know, I didn't, and everything was going fine. And he said, well, everything's just fine. I said, I believe I'll just come back to the office. And do you know what? When he left, it started again. Mm. And do you know what he had done? Now, to show you how chicken he was and how afraid he was, he had told the janitor to lock all the outside doors, and they couldn't get him.
Well, I never heard of it before.
Well, that happened. Well, I know.
Was this some years after the initial integration here,
oh,
I'm guessing?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
This is probably a decade after or something.
This was in 60. Oh, when did Martin Luther King die?
68.
Well, anyway, it was just one of those 67 somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there was a bunch from Chicago. There were three. I know there were three busloads of them. But now it would be a different route that would come through.
Right.
And that was the only thing that I thought I needed help from the office, but I didn't get it. It was just the funniest thing in the world.
It wasn't the time they had to sit down here, was it?
It, pardon?
But, you know, they had to sit down overnight, lunch counters, sit down. It wasn't that time.
Well, I don't remember that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know that.
Now, this is the only time that I ever had any incident, well, whatever, from my part, you know, that I was a little bit... I wasn't afraid. I've never been afraid of anything in my life, but I was a little concerned because I thought the office force should be there. Some man from the superintendent
And that was what year was that?
That was when I was principal of both schools.
Well,
see, we called
Waddle
Primary and Waddle.
I remember that because I had the first float. I was president of the first float that the blacks ever had. And that was when the two schools.
Yeah, you were.
Uh-huh.
I remember that.
First float.
What they did was
was way up in there. That's why
I didn't understand. Of course, Mr. Crow called me in and said, we're going to make you principal of both schools. Said, you're the one to do it.
Why did Mr. Crow, this is Thompson Crow, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why did he retire? He retired about the time all this happened, it seems to me. Is that right? Did he leave on any bizarre fashion, or did he just retire when it was time for him to retire?
I think he just retired when he was supposed to.
Okay.
I think
there was no controversy around his resignation at all? Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't remember that.
Okay. James, let me ask you again. I don't think I've asked you to talk specifically about this, but you know, you were pretty young, but can you recall that first day that you actually came to school, you know, after you've enrolled, your first full day at Waddle Avenue? And what was that like for you?
I think when Mama brought me there, I didn't have to stay at that time, which kind of reinforces the part about there wasn't a class at that time. There was maybe just an enrollment. When of the first full day of school, then, you know, it's just everybody makes you feel very self-conscious because they look at you, stare at you, that type of thing. You know, that was basically it. It wasn't anything that where I. It was a thing that I felt that for some reason I have to do this. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I never turned tail and ran or anything like that in going to any of the white school systems. Or any of the black school systems, you see, because I would meet black students going home as I was coming from my white school,
mm-hmm.
you know,
And they were close enough where that made sense.
Sure, right. You know, they say, oh, you go to a white school, don't you go to a white school? And I said, I'm going to a white school. The school is red, you know, red bricks and that type of stuff, you know. That,
How did your friends, your black friends that were still at Branch Street, I'm guessing, you know, how did they regard the fact that you were going over to school with the whites now?
They didn't care for it. I mean, it wasn't anything they could do about it. But they didn't care for it.
They weren't impressed, huh?
No, they weren't impressed.
Bless your heart.
Well, I think some people had envy.
Thank you.
Some people wanted to be with me. I think there were some students who would have liked to have been with me, you know. But then again, you know, of course, it was their parents' thing, and they. So they weren't able to be there, you know, and then the other persons would make fun, you know, and laugh and so forth like that, you know. And it seems like there was a situation as to where there was, where I told my mother that, thank you, sir, where I told my mother that the book that we have in the white school, that book is being used two grades lower. You know, I guess what I'm saying is whatever book was being used in the fifth grade, whatever book we were using in let's say the fifth grade in
at what school?
Well, we could say let's say there'd be a book that would be used in the in the grades in the black school.
Yes.
Okay.
It was almost two grades
of below or above.
Now the black was two grades below what was used in the high school.
Yeah.
We go to the bookstore, and the blacks weren't allowed to get certain books. They was marked off. And we couldn't even get it.
Oh, did you have to buy your own books back then in this system, or is that what you're saying?
No, the black school was teaching subjects, like if they was in the fourth grade or if they was in the fifth grade, they was teaching subjects that was two grades in the rear, two grades.
So in other words, third grade material.
Yes,
right, I understand.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So,
whatever I would be using in the fifth grade in the white school, then the black students would be using that in the seventh grade.
I understand.
In their school. You know. That
what are some other differences you noticed right away?
There's a lot of differences when it came to black people. I guess all, you know, blacks and whites are very proud of their athletic abilities and their teams and stuff like that, you know. And so it'd be a lot of teasing and a lot of shame and anger and stuff like that, you know, because you go to that school, you know. So
and
therefore, it's your fault.
They laughed,
you know,
the way he talked because he began to be mixed with
I would say things
another,
like, mother,
yes,
you know, that type of stuff.
And they would laugh.
Your language was affected.
Yeah,
my
speech
by the white
was being changed.
Yeah.
And what did your black friends say about that?
They said,
"What's wrong with him?"
They said, "Listen,
mother."
He
didn't say that. A little
too proper, huh?
Yeah,
right. Yes,
he said,
"No,
but now
you
know what we did know how to teach manners and all that."
Sure, sure.
But
it was unusual for others to hear that, I'm sure, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, not having been a part of it, and if you had to hear it while you were at work, you didn't have to keep hearing it after you got home, you know, that type of thing, you know. So if you were a janitor, if you were a maid, and you heard that type of proper kind of
rubbed off, didn't it?
kind of conversation, you know.
Right.
Then
it's your
environment. Then go back home and get the whole regular thing, you know, that type of stuff. You know.
Well, he was sitting in the car with a friend, neighboring family, still friends, and he began to notice things then. And this young man and him were about, I believe he was about a year older than you. I was talking about Miss Stella Combs' son.
Oh, yeah.
And the two books, yeah, supposed to be in the same grade. When he came home, he said, Mama, said, you know what? Said, his book was 2 years behind my book. We in the same grade.
Mm-hmm.
Why, Mama? So that's when he discovered.
Well, now listen, we started the levels program in the school, so where, like, not in the, when he was in my room, but right along at that time, where we had them reading and trying to do their work on the level that they could do it. Mm-hmm. And that went along in the blacks and also in the white schools.
Well, now I tell you, which you said it was a, was trying to bring up the same level. Let me tell you one thing. When I went in fighting that, I went out to the schools. I examined everything. I went to the workshops. I went to all of that. And I found out, comparing. So in the workshop where the young men learned to do carpentry, you know? Mm-hmm. Then I went out to the high school. The room was high. They had so much equipment. I was told that they had around $50,000 worth of equipment there for the young boys to learn wood cutting or whatever, and all that goes with that. They only had one machine that rolled the wall, sitting in the middle of the floor. And that's all the children could work with.
Well, I will say that through the years, after several years, I thought it would be fun to compare how well they were trained before they came into the Wild School, and you would find that there would be one excellent student to every 10, and every 10 at first. And then as when they really were integrated, you know, more and more, why, then they really came up. But there were several years.
They had for a while, I think.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Did the,
because they didn't have.
But then you see the white teachers were also put in the black schools.
Early on, you're talking about.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
White teachers in Rosenwald School?
Well, I don't know what it was in. It wasn't in Rosenwald, but I had white and black.
Well, you all did, but they didn't have no white teachers in the black school.
When we divided the first three grades and left them at Waddle, we put the 4th, 5th, and 6th grades at the Waddle School on Waddle. See, the first three were on Brand Street. The other three schools, 4th, 5th, and 6th, were at Brand Street. So therefore, the 4th, 5th, and 6th grade teachers from my building went from Waddle Elementary, went to Brand Street. And the 4th and 5th grade teachers, I mean 4th, 5th, and 6th grade teachers from Brand Street went to Waddle.
So, but you know, they closed them all black schools. They closed them completely.
Well,
the state came down and closed every black school.
Now, I know they did, hon, but now I'm talking about when we integrated the elementary school.
Oh, you're talking about the integration. I'm
talking about when they integrated, when they closed the black school, they divided mine. And they had the 3 first grades in one school,
from both schools, and the 4th, 5th, and 6th grade in the Branch Street School. What? And Mr. Crow says, we are going to make you the principal of both schools.
But the schools were integrated then, so we all come together. But whatever was for the white was for the black and blue.
When did Rosenwald close? This is the high school, right? When did that close, you know?
Listen, the messenger should know. I should know it.
68, I think. I have a I'm program not sure. from the last commencement at Rosenwald. It was on the front yard, and they had the steps. They had the steps and had the chairs on the steps, as I remember, at the door for the speakers and all. And then the chairs were sort of like horseshoe shaped out in the yard. It was the last commencement, and I went because it was the last one that was ever going to be. You know?
Uh-huh. What do you think a graduating class of Rosenwald would have been then, maybe?
Well, what had happened was the state law said you cannot run. At that time, it said you cannot run a high school with less than 100 students. Right. Well, Rosenwald had dropped below 100, but Massonville High School kept them out by appealing to the state by saying, we don't have room. And there was some truth to it, because that was right before they built Massonville North. They were still the Proud Springs. But that's what they kept telling the state. Don't close Rosenwald because we don't have room for them here. And they left it for 2 or 3 years. I don't know how long they left it open with less than 100 students, which was against state law.
Mm-hmm.
But then finally the state says, that's it. You're taking them, you better find a place. You don't have room, you better find a place, because they're going to be there next fall.
So no white ever attended Rosenwald High School?
No.
Okay.
No, not that I know of.
No white student ever attended
I don't know why they would, because we didn't have a 16 subjects down there. They had about 78 subjects at the white high school.
To choose from.
Yes, and then the next year they doubled to 100 and some. We still had the 16.
It has
served. Now why would they come to the black school? I don't think they would. Nobody would want that.
As an integrated school, it has served. That building was reopened as Caldwell Smith.
But it wasn't called Rosenwald High School anymore.
No more.
You're saying, so whites have attended school in that structure,
yeah,
but it was later on, and it was a younger group of kids, younger group
well,
of students.
Now, they never did, the whites never did go to Rosenwald.
Yeah. Not until it was renamed something else, and it wasn't a high school anymore. See, they put the Head Start there.
The Learning Center.
They had alternate school for a while there.
What mm-hmm. school?
Alternative.
They had alternate students. Mm-hmm. And they had the Head Start kindergarten. Which am I saying? Kindergarten or Head Start? Which was it? It was kindergarten, wasn't it? For a while.
Head Start.
It was. And the little bitty ones, because I remember.
I was director of the Head Start program.
Mm-hmm.
But
they erected a. After the building was empty, then there were so many break-ins that they erected a 12-foot fence, chain link fence around the building.
Really?
Yeah.
That was, I think there was a conspiracy myself to make that look like that part of town wasn't fit for anybody to have anything that could be kept safe, see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the break-ins were so severe that they had to have a 12-foot fence around it. But I thought they would put the 12-foot fence around there, it would have something to say to everybody about that part of town.
Right.
And who is they that you're speaking of?
I don't know.
Right. Okay.
Powers would be.
Gotcha. All right.
You know, there are a lot of things that we don't know what went on.
We don't know who
instigated a lot of the trouble that was caused during this time.
And when they had those tiny little children in there, the kindergarten kids, walking off the sidewalk through a gate to a 12-foot chain link fence, I said, doesn't this give them a good impression of what school's going to be like?
Wow.
To walk inside a 12-foot chain link fence.
Why did they put that fence up in the first place?
They said there were so many break-ins in the building.
Oh. I heard that too.
That they said there's no way to keep people out of it at night. And so I thought that was awful bad for tiny little children to be going inside of a 12-foot fence. This is their first thing. Well, here I am inside. Dude, this is going to be like being in a penitentiary.
It's prison, yes. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
ask a...
You had asked me one question I wanted to go back to.
Okay, go ahead, James.
You'd asked me about the first day of school, okay, and what it was like, you know. Now, it wasn't that intense the first day, but as time went on, okay, then persons began to want to fight and be mad and angry and challenge you.
As he got older, you know, coming into the bigger kids,
continued picking a fight, picking a fight. I mean, it was the same. I think probably after the first year in the ninth grade at Waddle Avenue, then maybe about, you know, later on in the months, people began to want to pick a fight, and stuff like that. That's what you were talking about.
Yeah, well, how did you respond to that?
You know, sometimes you fight, sometimes, I mean, you do what you have to do, you know. You fight, or either you don't fight, you know.
I mean, right. He told him to pile in on him, started biting him.
Did you ever get physically damaged in any of this, or was it just kind of like a fight any other two boys might have? I mean, did anybody ever team up on you or anything like that, or was it more just individuals? And
it was basically individuals. Yeah, it was even at junior high school, which was a 7th and 8th grade, where all 7th and 8th grade were all once after the white elementary 6th grade, as they graduated, then they all went to what is called seminary, which was junior high school. And there you get 7th and 8th grades from all different parts of the...
all the elementary span,
right,
into
all
seminary,
the
junior high, you
to the same place. Good. Right, uh-huh, right. So, and then it becomes extremely tough right there, you know.
I see. So that kind of goes back to what Ms. Logan was saying. Maybe at Waddle Avenue, the mix of students perhaps allowed for integration a little bit more so than normal.
Right.
Based on what you're saying now, because once you, even a few years later, you got into another school building with people from all over the county.
Had not gone to school with blacks, I suppose, or African Americans.
Yeah.
How many were other black Americans were in the school when you went to junior high?
Like
7th and 8th grade.
I think there was only two African Americans that had gone into the 7th grade at seminary at the 7th and 8th grade.
When you went in?
Yes, ma'am. Uh-huh. And that was Laverne Griffith and myself. And I was wrong. It was James Mays.
Okay.
And myself.
All right.
Right. Okay. And then, of course, James Mays was, you know, he was kind of a big, huge, stocky person, you know, and
well,
so
he could, was the bride, wasn't he?
Yes, ma'am.
Correct.
And of course, you know, he was able to keep folks away, you know. But then after he was no longer there, you know, the folks come back, you know, you know, that type of thing, you know. You know,
well,
because
was that the 7th grade?
At the 8th grade.
7th and 8th grade.
Yeah, it was 7th and 8th grade, but it was, yeah.
He was the first black at Pride, right? I think he and together with maybe at least one more. Let's
What do you mean? After it was integrated, then he went to Pride at the 7th and 8th grade. Well, I couldn't answer that because I didn't know, you know.
Right.
Now, I'll tell you who you could talk to is because she was the principal at Pride, and that's Jesse Edwards, H.H. Edwards, Mrs. H.H. Edwards.
I'll try to get a hold of her.
Were you in there with, I mean, you was in your class at Pride?
No, he
was. I mean, was he at your class at junior high?
Uh-huh.
It's
yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the 7th grade.
Right.
Okay. I don't even know that young man. Where is he? Is he dead? I mean, he's dead.
I think he relocated or something.
Is he living?
I don't know. I don't think he. I think they left town. Mays. Remember the Mays family?
Yeah. my husband knew him. I believe he was kind of holding his people. So.
Yeah.
But I think he kind of knows.
Many names. Not the same family. Many names.
He was talking about it.
Yeah, James Mays, the guy, the student that I went to school with.
Did you know him?
I don't want many Mays here now. I just think it might be the same thing.
All right, in early September, about the time that James actually had entered school, Mr. Van Leer had phoned in that a cross was burning across the street. You guys were living over at... in the Rosenwald Apartments, and this was at maybe Branch in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And but this story also made the Louisville Courier Journal. This was on the front page of the Louisville Courier Journal.
I see.
Can you explain what happened there? What?
Well, it happened so quick. I just have to be, I just went to the, see, this was our front in a way. Because down there on the lower level is the CME church. And when I came to the front of my house that was facing Kentucky, all I saw at that time, it was a huge, like a post or something, you know. And it was just a blaze. And so I looked, and whoever it was running from it. But we never did find out who did it.
Was that a one-time occurrence?
That was one time.
Was there any other kind of, I guess I would call that a threat. Was there any other kinds of threats or pressure that resemble that you experienced at the time?
Well, yes. Of course, it's ran from my place in the apartment up to my mother's place, too. That's... all of that was an involvement there of them, you know, trying to scare us and crush us, you know. Yeah, let me see now. There's so much to it. Oh, yes. Man came to my apartment, and James is in school already in there. And that was the same apartment you're talking about. And James had gone to school that morning. I don't remember whether he carried him or not, but he'd gone to school.
No, I don't think he brought him. I think he walked on it. I might say.
He might have, but anyhow, he was in school that morning mm-hmm. when this man came. And I could hear him coming across the apartment lot. I was in the apartment, Rosenwald apartment then. And I heard... but nobody there but me, because he had already gone to school. And I heard my name called, Miss Vanley, and Miss Vanley, a man with a real coarse voice, you know. And somebody wanted to know where I live. I know that's where it was, what it was about, because in a few minutes he knocked on my door. And I opened the door. And he asked, this is where Miss Vanley? I said, yes, this is Miss Vanley, come in. So he came on in. So he was trying to make me think he was a painter. He had on clothes with paint all on it, you know. And I could tell that he you know, that was something just to pretend because his shoes didn't have a spot of paint on him. So anyhow, he says, your son James is still in school there. And I said, yes, he is. He said, well, now I'm just coming to you because I want to help you. Said, I heard somebody say up there, I believe he said it was in the courthouse lobby or somewhere up there. He said, if you don't have that boss, and I'm trying to help you. Said, I heard three folks planning to do you harm. If you don't have that boy out, by in the morning, I'm trying to help you. They said they're going to blow you to kingdom come. And so I looked at him. I said, you people are doing just like you always do. You've always wanted to hurt people. I said, you're doing just like you've always done. Well, I'm trying to help you. I said, well, all right. And I looked at him. I know he was disguised.
because you don't paint a building and your shoes look all nice and don't paint it. So that was one incident, and I think he was one man also that had some sort of, well, you know how they farm things. I was trying to get my brother out of the job in town.
Well, what would you talk a little? Your brother is Aggie Elliott, right?
Yes.
Edward.
Edward Aggie, and Aggie, was that his nickname?
Yeah. They called
him Egghead.
Egghead.
He never did like that name.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, Edward. Okay, I'm sorry. Well, could you maybe tell us a little bit about his involvement with this whole situation?
Well, Edward had made pretty good money out of what he was doing, and he was working at one of the leading barber shops there in town, a beauty shop and barber shop combined. And he was on a salary for a while, and then they decided that that he was good, but they decided to see if he could make it just like an agent or something, you know, his salary, you know. So he made way more just making it himself than them even paying him a salary. So anyway, he could make polish at that time. Folks did a lot of shoe polishing.
Right. I remember reading that. He was a shoe shiner at one time.
Yeah, and he made all kinds of polish. And people would send things. He'd have to pick them up at the train for him to do his work and then send the shoes back.
Really?
Yeah, so he made quite a bit of money. So anyway, he was boycotted in a way, because this one man, he would walk up and down in front of the building, and he would have some people to call in, you know, on his job. So he finally just gave up the job, and then he started first with a restaurant, you know, doing that. And the Lord was so good to us during that time that he was out of a job, because he was on the telephone and everything. He just felt that he just didn't want to stick there no more in town. So anyway,
I didn't know about the restaurant. They were having a restaurant?
Yes. It's so much honest to it all, you know. So anyway, he had, yes, one of the stores, the Lord is so good, one of the stores, the meat counter went off during the time they didn't have a job. And they sent all the meat over to our house. It wasn't ruined. But they came in our house with meat on the shoulder, bring it to us. I don't know how long we didn't have meat. We ate better during that time we ever ate in our life. Do you understand?
Yes, ma'am.
That was just God provided. That's what it was. So anyway, and then later on, there was people that we used to work for that, I don't know what to call the name, I mean he did, that brought him a check for a couple of thousand dollars.